They cannot believe it. They cannot watch back in Valentino Rossi's garage. Valentino Rossi wins here in Aslan.
And all credit to Jorge Lorenzo. What a great ride from the world champion.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 370 for Wednesday, the... It's not for Wednesday, the 26th of June.
No, it's Wednesday the...
for Wednesday the 3rd of July.
Right.
Although we're actually recording this on... for me, it's Tuesday the 2nd of July. For Jim, for Jules, it's still... Monday, the 1st of July.
Yes.
So, hello, Jules, hey. In California.
It's very early for mine. Forgive him. Forgive him, please.
Yeah, it's 06:38. Yeah. So, for tomorrow, obviously thinking this might be Wednesday, happy Independence Day. Who was it you kicked out? I can't remember. There's some horrible people. War Red Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it's the Welsh in particular.
No. Absolutely. But then, of course, I'm not actually Welsh. I'm an economic migrant.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm English.
Well, yeah.
Sorry if that shatters a lot of people's illusions. yeah. So, hello, everyone. And wow, what a weekend of racing. I mean, I know sometimes we're like, oh, why can't they separate? But with Aston MotoGP being on a Saturday, Imola World Superbike being on the Sunday, it was just... fabulous. And God bless the good people of Wales who were very careful, and I actually got to see all the MotoGP races live, although we did squeeze in one shout between the Moto2 and the MotoGP.
What was the shout?
It was a mountain biker. We went up, we struggled to find him because he was up in the hills, and eventually got to the overhead, and as a medic arrived on the ground, and he went, we don't need you. This guy's got a hurty knee.
Oh, okay.
So it was, yeah, it happens sometimes. You know, the guy's mate who called in was
freaking out a bit.
Yeah, a bit panicky, and he was like, "Look, I don't know, but he seems really dazed." And we were thinking, "Oh, yeah, that's right." He said he's bleeding from out of his head.
Jesus, yeah, of
which
course.
Sounds bad. No,
yeah,
what
it could be really bad, or just a cut, and then you know,
he's cut his cheek, you know, but bleeding Ooh. From out.
Oh shit! What? I just popped open a very nice ale and it exploded.
Oh, fantastic. I've got a lovely mug of coffee.
This is kind of like coffee. It's a
I can just hear pouring.
Yeah. Well, it's pouring onto the ground.
It's not pouring, it's spilling.
Yes, unfortunately. Okay. So,
yeah. Well, we had some sort of errata, John Hart, Doug Logston and various other listeners telling me that, yet again, I was wrong because I said Rossi would never win another race. And, oh, that's a spoiler. And obviously I pointed out, actually, you know, what I said was I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't win another race. And it turns out that Rossi was thinking pretty much the same thing. So last week, Jim and I did the call on Thursday night. So we'd had FP1 and 2. Lorenzo had broken his collarbone and had been flying off to go and get... surgery in Barcelona, and that was his weekend done, as we thought. So we will come on to that, no doubt, at great length. Before we do, there is some news and miscellany to go through.
Yes.
We hear that Alex De Angelis is going to ride Ben Spies Ducati at Laguna Seca, meaning the absent and injured rider clearly won't be back till Indianapolis, although Ben did say that a couple of weeks ago, that was his target. Michele Pirro will substitute at Sachsenring again, but he's got a test at Misano over the Laguna Seca week, so he won't be able to make that round. So they brought Alex De Angelis in. Obviously, it's no clash with Moto2 because they don't go there. And also this week, MotoGP.com reports several riders, including Stefan Bradl, Cal Crutchlow, Hector Barbera, and Alvaro Bautista, plus Nico Tirol and Esteve Rabat from Moto2, will be in Argentina at the Autodromo Termas de Río Hondo, the new track where they're hoping from next year, and they were hoping this year to host MotoGP races from.
Right, right.
So,
and if when they do, is Coda going to have to rename themselves?
Who, sorry?
Well, the Circuit of the Americas. The GP of the Americas, that's what it was called, remember?
Oh, what?
The Austin round. Well, once we have another American round, you know, it's kind of weird.
Well, you've already got two others.
Yeah, but they're all in the same America.
Oh, I see. Yes. So maybe they'll just drop the
right.
And the S off Americas, so it'll just be Circuit of America.
There you go.
Also, Carmelo Espeleta has outlined plans for World Superbike. They are going to introduce a subclass from next year to run within superbikes, and it will be called Evo.
That sounds very familiar.
Doesn't it just? Yes. Yeah. BSB did this in 2010. It was a class within a class, similar to CRT, but they were closer from the off to the leading bikes than CRT had been. They were pretty much... The Evo bikes were pretty much right from the start where CRT are now, mm-hmm. if you're particularly looking at Aleth Espargaró and Randy Depunier's bikes. In BSB's case, it then became standard for everyone from 2011. It's been very well received. It's actually, there was a lot of resistance, you know, emotional resistance amongst the fans. The specifics of the World Superbike proposal yet to be confirmed. But Espeleta has said, you know, he's long been a critic of World Superbike's growing sophistication and therefore cost. So it's not really a surprise. I suspect that this will come in as a practice, you know, next year. Yeah, if you want to come in at this cheaper level. And they'll probably boost it and make it look quite prestigious and have a, like you know,
well,
CRT.
Yeah, exactly. It's CRT for superbikes.
Yeah. And I suspect that we'll see it come in. I mean, I don't know if they'll go as far as BSB. That's a spec ECU. There's no traction control, no wheelie control, very few rider aids, minimal engine tuning allowed. So, but, I mean, we've seen some brilliant racing in CRT the last couple of years. So,
and especially this weekend.
In BSB.
Oh, no. You said CRT. Sorry.
Sorry, no. So we've seen some brilliant racing in the CR in BSB.
Right. Absolutely.
It's I'm getting my TLAs confused. So that'll be interesting. I suspect there'll be a bit of a, they're separating World Superbike from MotoGP.
Right, because the worry, and I'm not sure if it should be something that you should be worried about, but the worry is that the Evo class is going to become superbikes.
Yes, you know? I think it will.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think it's necessarily a terrible thing, because to me, World Superbikes, the production and racing, kind of lost its way, because you really don't. Those aren't really production bikes. I mean, we know that. And
no.
And I think it'd be awesome to actually see a world championship, not like a local championship that runs true production machine. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't help thinking back to the chat last week with Jenny Tinmouth, and she was saying,
yeah,
basically,
exactly.
I got a VFR 400, took the indicators and the mirrors off. It still had a horn. I mean, that made me laugh. So the horn was still on there.
Exactly.
But, you know, we took the lights off, put race fairings on, and I thought I could go racing with that, and then wonder why everyone kept going past me.
There is super stock, you know, which is that, that's kind of what it would be, but it's not... It doesn't attract the top riders, so you know it's a feeder series.
Yeah, I mean that was one of the concerns with BSB was what will happen to Superstock when BSB comes down to Evo. Well, actually, we've still got it. They still run a few seconds slower. It's still a huge class, a very popular class. So, you know, what's this space? Well, interesting to see what they come out with the technical regulations, because they need to announce that fairly soon.
They do,
so teams can start to prepare
and the factories. Yeah.
Yeah, MotoGP also reporting Jorge Lorenzo's decision to race at Assen on Saturday has had no negative effect on his recovery, according to his latest medical check, who said, yeah, no, he's, and he will be spending a lot of time in a hyperbaric chamber, I suspect. So, hey, there's another spoiler. Yeah, he ran. I'm sure everyone knows. But it wasn't just MotoGP. We had three
incredible,
fantastic races.
Incredible racing all weekend. Yeah. And superbikes too. I mean, it was just a fucking amazing weekend to be a motorcycle racing fan.
Yeah. I mean, I know we haven't gone to it yet, but if the title for this isn't "This Is Why We Watch," then it should have been.
Right.
So my suggestions for titles have never... in 3.5 years of help of a co-host in this show have never been accepted, because they're always crap or too obscure. or just to, you know, the opposite of obscure, whatever that is. But no, I tweeted at the end of it. I said, you know, I quite accept people have different tastes and interests, but for me, it don't get any better than this.
No,
you know,
no.
And yeah, so I mean, Moto 3, we had the first ever Portuguese pole position from Miguel Oliveira. I could hear Gonzalo cheering all the way from Australia.
Oh my God! Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was an interesting qualifying session for them all as well. I mean, we had Oliveira, Alex Marquez, and Maverick Vinales on the front row. Luis Salom, Alex Rins, and Jonas Folger were on the second row. And Nicky Ayo, Isaac Vinales, and Arthur Sissis, row three. Romano Fanati watch, where I think he qualified 18th, 22nd, something. Wasn't great, but anyway.
Well, just remember I don't think I remember ever seeing this, which was that Oliveira and Marquez had the same exact time. But because Oliveira got it first, he got to be on pole.
Well, I've heard that, and I've also heard they do a count back to their second fastest laps.
Interesting.
Yeah, but there is obviously a way of doing it, but they were both 143.588, and that is just, it's a thousandth of a second, you know.
Well, there wasn't, it's not. That's the thing, it's less than a thousandth of a second.
Well, yeah, sorry, it's less than a thousandth of a second. So
the thing is that we've had this situation further down the ranks, but never for pole position that I remember.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Which is amazing.
And Alex Marquez must have been thinking, oh, I could have squeezed an extra thous
I know. If I had just ducked, you know, a couple millimeters lower to have a little bit less drag. I mean, it's amazing to think about what it takes for two riders to be that close. Yeah, Alex, you know, Alex Rins and Jonas Folger were looking really good during free practice, especially Folger again. But but in qualifying, he was having a tough time. I think he crashed, didn't he, during qualifying, Folger?
Got to be honest, I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he did, and then he had to get back to the garage. Anyway, he was looking fantastic.
I think he did. I mean, Jonas Folger is strange. He almost reminds me a bit of Scott Redding when he first came up to Moto2. Blisteringly quick, but just some combination of his style, the bike, the setup, and, you know, he struggles to maintain that pace for over a race, you know. And we had, there were two groups formed.
Are we talking about the race now?
Yeah, into the race.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly quickly, we had six breakaway at the front. Salom, Vinales, Rins, Oliveira, Marquez, and Folger. Folger then got dropped, and he was the link because the next group was like
30 seconds behind.
Yeah, but 15 of them or something.
Oh, yeah,
it was
absolutely
huge.
Yeah.
Just beating the shit out of each other. You know, and then, but we had this group of Salom, Vinales, Rins, Oliveira, Marquez at the front. And again, we had this incredible situation very impressive racecraft by Luis Salom. Now, if you last year had used the words racecraft and Salom in the same sentence, people would have raised eyebrows because he was the classic
crazy
win
man.
It or bin it.
Yeah, but
very, very Simoncelli-like, very much ran.
Last year, I don't know if you remember, last year, because we talked about this race last year, the 125s. Sorry, it was already Moto 3, sorry. We talked about this last year at Assen because this was when Luis Salom kind of started to appear on radar really strong. And I remember that the friend of the show, Ed Hauser, who's, you know, been racing for many decades, he was saying, you got to watch this guy. He is going to be something special.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him in Assen, and he did some crazy stuff, you know, and it was, like you said, it seemed like Bennett until that point. Then I started watching more carefully, and yeah, he was very aggressive and made stupid mistakes and caused a lot of anguish. I think he got penalized once during that season. But
yeah,
this is the classic one, you know, where this crazy man kind of comes out, but then somebody he starts to mature and look at the racecraft, because the last race was he was incredible, and this race, what he did on those last laps was brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, he sat behind this group of four, Vinales, Oliveira, Rins Marquez, and they were beating each other up. And then Vinales got to the front, and as I think it was about four or five laps to go. I haven't got the lap chart up this week for the Moto3, as I probably should have done. But it was interesting. I was watching on MotoGP.com, and Nick Harris and Gavin Emmett were being very clear that it's the credit for Salom's development is being given to Aki Ayo, his team manager. Now, I mean, Aki Ayo, for those who don't know, he was a Scandinavian and European Superbike rider. He wildcarded a couple of times at world level, I think in the smaller classes or possibly in Superbikes. But then a bad injury led to an early retirement from racing, and he just put heart and soul into developing a team. Now, he is obviously a good coach. Now, this is the father of Nicky Ayo, who's not actually in his team. He's in a different team. But of course, he was the guy who coached Sandro Cortese last year, or who managed Sandro Cortese to the championship. And they were being very clear that, you know, this is the influence of Aki Ayo.
And Zalfa Mikhailidin last year as well.
Yeah. But what was interesting was Alex Marquez and Alex Rins. Yeah, if ever the term teammate shouldn't be taken in any deeper meaning than the fact that they both run for the same team. They were knocking 10 bells out of each other. Vinales looked like he was going to get away. Four or five laps to go, and they said, Salom needs to be careful here. He cannot allow Vinales to pull the pin. Right. And within the space of a lap, he just gone chop, 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 chop. And the pass on Vinales was, you know, it was clean, but man, and you could see, you just knew he'd set this up. He had his plan, and this season, often than not, Salom's plan comes off.
This year?
Yeah.
Because last year his plan was to stuff it, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it worked and sometimes it did not. Yeah, no, it was incredible. I really thought Vinales had it myself.
Yeah,
He had the pace. I thought it looked like he had the pace. It looked like Salom was just keeping up with that group, but he had something left in there. He was very wily. It was a wily win.
I mean, we had all five of them were within 0.4 of a second of each other.
Yeah.
It was a classic through the last chicane. You know, pop out, head down, go for the line. Then we had Folger, lonely. 19 seconds behind them. Another 8 seconds behind with Jack Miller and Arthur Sissis, the two Aussies duking it out, 0.2 of a second as Miller pips Sissis. Then we had a group of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
basically
9,
all the way
10,
down to 20.
12, yeah, who were within a second.
Within a second of each other.
12 people within a second of each other.
Yeah.
And in that group was, you know, Antonelli was in there, Fanati, Brad Binder, who took the last point. Uh-huh. I mean, Jakob Thornfar must be gutted because he's come 16th.
Right.
So you get nothing. And quite sad news, in his 100th GP, Danny Webb crashed and has broken his wrist, I think.
Yeah.
So hopefully he'll be back.
It's amazing that kid has had 100 GPs already.
I know.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, 23rd for Mark VDS, Livio Loy, Ian Wheeler tweeted a picture and ready to go out. And I'm not being funny. If Mia, who's 12, came home from, this is my daughter, or stepdaughter, I should say, came home from school and said, this is my friend Livio, you know, you'd think, yeah, 12-year-old, that looks fine. he looks so incredibly young.
Yeah.
And interestingly, for the weekend, and probably quite annoyingly to Miguel Oliveira, seeing as he came fourth, we had pole lap, Miguel Oliveira, fastest lap in lap 12, Miguel Oliveira, circuit record lap, Miguel Oliveira, and best lap, Miguel Oliveira.
Right. But he missed out on the podium.
Absolutely.
We got to also mention Jasper Imola, you know, being local.
Yeah.
had a lot of, I mean, he was looking pretty good. He was looking just, you know, maybe during the free practice, he was constantly in the top 10, which is pretty good. And he qualified, 11th, right? Yep. Unfortunately, he crashed. And just, you know, four laps from the end of the race, he crashed out, and that's a bummer.
Yeah,
I think he was in that group of 12, so he was one. You know, I think he was a casualty of that.
Absolutely, I mean that's crazy. But it was classic Peloton style Moto 3, just as we used to see with 125s, you know. And I mean we also lost Thomas van Leeuwen, who I think was a wildcard rider, local rider, and Juanfran Guevara went out in the first lap. On his own, I think he just slid off. So, it was dry conditions. You know, it was cool. Track temperature was 18 for the Moto3. Air temperature was 15. So it was mild, but not certainly very different conditions to cancel.
That's a really good point. We forgot to mention that the weather was really wacky the entire weekend.
Yeah.
And we got a great Saturday, considering.
Yeah, I mean, all the journos were waking up and saying, wow, it is black and the ground's wet and
it's going to suck.
I've been hearing rain. And then it just dried and we didn't get any back. And it was quite a relief. Now, what's strange is when you look at the championship standings is, you know, this feels like Luis Salom is doing what Marquez did in Moto2 last year, what, Sandro Cortese did in Moto3. And yet he's on 152 points. Vinales is only 10 points behind on 142. And then we've got Alex Rins on 117. And then a big gap back to Jonas Folger, which is strange because that's like a microcosm of the race, on 73. Followed by Marquez, Oliveira, Masbu, Kai Ruthin. Fanati Watch, he's down in 16th place on 20 points. Just 5 points ahead of Danny Webb. But, yeah, it feels like Salom should have a larger lead than that. But it certainly makes for an interesting championship. So, you know, it's early days. Nothing is anywhere near decided yet. We're a third of the way through the season, or just over, for the Moto3 and Moto2, because, of course, they don't go to Laguna.
Both Vinales and Salom have been on the podium at every single race this season so far.
Yeah, so those boys are putting some consistency in. And I like the way they're both going about their business. You know, there's no sort of stamping of feet or anything. They're just getting on with it. Maverick looked rueful afterwards, but with a smile still. You know, Alex Rins, who at one stage had led. In fact, I think all of them at some stage had led. You know,
it's true.
Brilliant, that class. I love it.
Yeah.
And then we went on to Moto2, and again, it was an interesting free practice and qualifying series. Paul Espargaro got pole. Mm-hmm. Johann Zarco was up in second. He was next to him on the starting lineup with Scott Redding still pole shadow. excuse me. Esteve Rabat, Xavier Simon, and Ant West were on the second row. Mattia Pessini, Mika Kallio, Mike D'Amelio had a really, really good weekend up to and including some of the race.
Right.
When things unfortunately went wrong. Dominic Agata was 10th. Mike D'Amelio was 9th. Dominic Agata was 10th. Sandro Cortese, 11th. That's the highest he's qualified so far. Starting to come together with it. Simone Corsi was 12th. Now, Takaki Nakagami, qualified 13th, but had crashed and wasn't actually able to start the race. He's also broken his collarbone, but the reports are that he should be back for Sachsenring with no problem. So he's gone and hurt himself, which is a shame.
Yep.
It was the Paul Espargaro show, but ably supported by an attendant, Scott Redding. Now, it was interesting because the two of them, Agata was with them as well. And Dominic Agata is really looking quite good.
Yes.
In flashes. And there was one bit where he actually got past the pair of them I think for only one lap. Then they both got back past him and started to pull away a little bit. But Pol very clearly let Scott through.
Yeah, at one point. Yeah, he did. But I was going to say he did, but I think he started to regret it a little bit.
Well, yeah, because within about half a lap, it looked like Scott was managing to gap him, and I just thought it's one of those ones. I remember Nico Tirol doing this to someone, and it was like,
right.
Go on, then. You take the lead. Let's see what you got. Oh, you got quite a lot. Oh, yeah. Let's see how fast you are. Wow, you're really fast. I can't keep up. but he did manage to. It was strange that they each had. I mean, Scott was really fast in the first sector and the third sector, but the straight and the middle sector, Pol was much quicker. And it's actually
interesting.
Areas
because,
of advantage.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And the passes that they had on each other were also very indicative that they really have a very different riding style, those two.
Yeah.
Which explains why they were good in the different sectors as well, because the first sector at Aston has got that really slow corner, which is pretty much the only place where you bunch up, you know.
Yeah, and it just goes on and on and on and on, yeah, and on. that's enough ons, I think. Yeah,
but he did catch him, and I was, you know, I mean, I'm rooting for Scott, and. You know, nothing against Pol. I really like both those guys in person. Yeah. They're such super nice guys, super cool guys. Even with Pol's kind of frustration this year.
Well, I think
he's just so passionate. That guy is just full of so much passion that, you know, it comes out in a negative way when things don't go right. You know,
I think generally his passion is expressed in a passionate joy.
Right.
It's just, I think there was so much expectation on him this year. And I think inevitably, but you know, let's not forget, these are young lads. You know, I think inevitably some of that seeps through, you know, by osmosis. when you're being told that many times that, you know, you're the nailed on favourite. And, he, you can sort of forgive him for thinking, well, you know, Scott's fast, but he lacks consistency, because in previous years that has been the case. But he looks so smooth, Scott Redding. Now
he's,
you know, he was fast, but he was fast and wild. Now he's just fast and consistent. And the way, you know, he used to throw the bike into the corner.
Exactly.
Now he just kind of swooshes into the corner, and it's incredibly graceful to watch.
He slides it a lot less because that was killing his tires. You know.
Yeah.
And it's
Yoni Hernandez. Take note.
You know, it's funny,
but don't stop, we love it. But yeah, it was really interesting to see. And I think the other ride of note was Mika Kallio, who just
again
progressed with surgical precision, to use a cliche, through the following pack. Yeah, and he was just pipping them off and ended up coming a very creditable fourth, 0.1 behind Dominic Agutter. I mean, he was going for another podium.
Well, he did have the podium, it looked like. You know, yeah. Agutter has had that kind of, you know, he's up front, and then starts to fade towards the end of the race also. And he's also figured out how to not do that anymore. Because
he appeared to be, didn't he? And then he came back.
Exactly.
And that was good from the Swiss lad.
Yeah.
And then we had Esteve Rabat was fifth behind Kallio, with Johann Zarco just behind him. And that was that following group of four. Yep. Xavier Simeon a little bit further back. Tom Luthy, another creditable 12th. Jordi Torres, Ant West, 10th. Good to see him in the top 10. Julian Simon, Randy Krumenacke, Louis Rossi on the Tech Tour, scoring 3 points. Marcel Schrotter and Sandro Cortesi got his first point. So, you know, good to the, but what I love about this is you got a Spanish on the podium. Okay, so we've got the Spanish national anthem again, then a Brit, then Swiss, then Finnish, Spanish, French, Belgian, Swiss, Spanish, Australian, Spanish, Swiss, French, German, San Marino, that'll be Alex DeAngelis, just missing out on the points. You know, it's spreading out. We are getting top riders coming from all over the world, you know, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's strange. Someone mentioned on Twitter, and it might have been Dave Minella, I can't remember, just said, mentioned this and just said, great to see so many different nationalities, .. Where are the Americans? You know, and that is the problem with the smaller classes. You know, where are the Cameron Bouviers?
You know, I'm telling you, man, we, in America, we suffer from bigness, largeness. We like everything to be big.
Yeah.
We just don't go in for the small classes. Our kids are immediately sent to 600s and then 1,000s.
Oh, sorry. You know? I thought you were talking about body weight there.
Everything. Everything, man. That's where, yeah. I mean, that's that's America to a T, man. And I think it's a really big mistake. I think it's a shame we don't have real support for the smaller classes here in the States.
And that's
suffering. I mean, we're suffering.
Sharon said, you know, when we're watching races together, she's like, and when we went to Catalonia, she said, you know, oh, she said, I don't mind the Moto 3. I like them. She said, those Moto 2, they just, the noise annoys me. And she said, apart from like Scott Redding and Paul Espargaro, she doesn't really know any of the riders, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's when you get to know their characters and their riding styles and, you know, the characters, you know, in and out of the paddock, it adds that extra depth to it.
Absolutely.
Although I've got to be honest, I can watch, you know, ITV4 coverage of the Northwest 200 and I'll not recognize half the names because a lot of them are local kids who are just really good on those roads, probably because that's how they ride to the shops when it's not and they're not jobs, you know, but I'll still watch it. I suppose, yeah, it's about depth of interest, isn't it? But
yeah, totally. I mean, you know, my wife's the same way. I mean, yeah, if it wasn't for, you know, we'll get on to MotoGP in a sec, but yeah.
We've got in the standings. Sorry, did you have more to say about the race?
No, I was just going to go into the championship standings.
Yeah, no, you go through those.
And you know, Scott's consistency is still there. He's been off the podium twice. He's still leading 134 to 104. It's still a lot of points, 30. But you know, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 rounds for Moto2, and Paul's really coming on strong now.
He is, but you know. I think, and I'm not sure I actually finished the earlier sentence, that yes, Paul let Scott pass, and it looked at briefly
as
if Scott would get away, but Paul did get him back. But I think this is the difference. This is the maturity with Scott Redding, that, yeah, sure, he was trying to get by. Paul very, very effectively blocked the classic Assen last chicane pass.
Yes.
Really well positioned. Danny Pedrosa, take note. But Scott, I think leading up to that, he was trying to get past. Of course he was, but there wasn't, you know, he's got that, do you know what? I'll get past if I can do so without wiping out.
Right.
But I'm not going to risk crashing, you know, and
because
losing.
It's only 5 points, quote, quote.
Exactly. Exactly. So he's still more than a clear race win away. Yeah. Estevao Rabat's still in touch on 86. Well, he's still in touch with Paul. So, you know, he's what, 18 points behind. Then Mika Kallio, only 6 points behind that. Dominic Agata, 1 point behind him on 77. Johann Zarco, Nico Tirol, so on and so forth. And I'm sorry, Sandro Cortese, I did you injustice. He's got 6 points so far this season. So that wasn't his first point. I think it was just the...
No, because he was not... he was 14th in Italy. And he was 13th in France. Yep.
Yeah.
He's, well, France was the crash fest, but...
Yeah. And it just, you know, again, we've got Louis Rossi on 4 points in 22nd place. Danny Kent on 3 points in 23rd place. Those Tech Trois bikes, you know.
Hey, they were 13th. They had a 13th.
Yeah. 13th and a 20th. It's just like a team like Tech Trois.
With those riders especially, I mean.
The most successful MotoGP satellite team since the introduction of the 800s, you know. By some distance, and in case anyone's going, well, I've got the stats to back that one up, but we'll go into that at a later date. But you know, it's. I don't know how long do you go before you. And there was a strange one. Tony Elias didn't start the race because he crashed on the warm up lap.
Right.
And some, I think it might have been Steve Day on Eurosport's like, wow, when was the last time we saw that happen? I'm thinking, well, Tom Sykes in World Superbike last weekend. Casey Stoner at Valencia in 2009. You know, it's happened. We had the Danny Pedrosa. All right, it wasn't a crash, but the when he hit the pit lane button and then came in behind the... That was last year, wasn't it? Behind the safety car and da-da-da-da. So, MotoGP, I mean, the drama started right from FP1, where we had the one dry session they had leading up to qualifying. And as a result of that, Lorenzo had qualified for Q2, still has the fastest rider. And then, of course, we had the crashing, lots of people crashing. Mark Marquez had broken a bone in his toe
and in his hand.
Yep. Various people were in various states of ill repair. But what we also had was an awful weekend for factory Ducati.
Well, we didn't really talk about, you guys didn't talk about Lorenzo's crash that much last week.
Right.
So we should probably mention that, you know, because he crashed at the fastest point of the track, and it actually didn't look that bad, you know?
He didn't get launched upwards, did he? My God, I can see my house from here. He got launched forwards.
He got launched forwards, and I think that it was when he hit the gravel that his shoulder got dragged, it looked like.
Deceleration rather than the impact. And the suit had inflated fine. A couple of people said it didn't look like the suit had inflated. And you know, it's hard to tell because
it's a very small. It's not like it's a giant bubble. You know, like it's not like a car airbag.
No. And of course, it doesn't make you invulnerable. You know, I mean, this is one of the concerns with the level of kit that road riders have. You know, that you can you know, surround yourself in titanium and Kevlar reinforced armor. You hit a tree at 75 miles an hour, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference. You know, it just means you've got an intact body.
You're
to carry
away. Spamming a can.
Absolutely. I mean, he flew away, and this is I think one of the fascinating things of the weekend. And of course, he didn't get on the podium, so no one got to interview Danny Pedrosa. I doubt he was very, you know, keen to go and speak to journalists. There was one fleeting shot of him looking glum, but then Danny always looks fairly glum unless he's actually won. But I'm thinking Thursday night, none of them, and we saw their reaction when we've had tragedies in the past, none of them want someone to get hurt.
Right.
But if someone does, they'll obviously, you know, they are racers. They want to win. And Danny Pedrosa, 7 points in the lead going into this weekend. Thursday night, must have been thinking, do you know what? I know I haven't won it for a long time, but if I can, my main rival's out the way. You know, that pesky kid, yeah, I can have him. Rossi still hasn't sorted out the Yamaha. Crutchlow, he could be a concern. No, I can probably win this. I could leave here with a 32-point lead.
Right. Right.
And then he starts hearing these rumors that Lorenzo's going to come back. And he's probably thinking the same. I mean, I don't want to stitch him up, but Duncan Bishop, bless him, was you know, we were having Twitter discussions, and he's saying, look, he may be in a situation. Get the operation really early, because that gives him the most recovery time before Sachsenring. Come back and try and race. The doctors say, no, you can't. He looks, everyone's like, wow, that's really good, you know, that he tried to and he wasn't allowed to. But, you know, he's lost nothing. And Duncan said, look, that might be a bit cynical. That may well have been part of the plan. That might have been plan B. But as it turns out, he came back and the doctors went, you can have a go if you want.
He
did, which was amazing. Oh, morning, Scott. Tech logs in the crew room with the keys and everything. Do you need anything from here? Yeah, it's in the hangar. Sorry, that was just the arrival of our engineer, Brighton Breezy. So, sorry
morning,
about
Scott.
That.
Morning, Scott. I like that.
Morning, Scott. Yeah, first word spoken in Top Gun. Good quiz question for you there. Yes.
So I mean, the fact that he came back. I mean, I remember seeing the tweets and thinking, you know, he's going to come back and he's just going to sit there just to kind of drill his eyes into the back of all the other riders, you know, and he actually got on the bike and went out there during warm up. And he had to do what, 10 push-ups?
Yeah.
For the doctors?
There were sort of angled push-ups.
Yeah.
Although that was a crack. He was doing it against what looked like some kind of couch. in the garage, someone tweeted a picture, and someone went, "Wow, he's doing press ups on a broken collarbone." And Duncan said, "No, he's trying to put away the fold out bed," because it did kind of look like That's he was funny. Trying to push something in, which just made me laugh. And then he went out, and he wasn't the slowest in warm up, but he wasn't the quickest. And watching him on the bike, it just looked like, he just looked perfectly normal.
I'll tell you, this was the perfect track for him to come back to. There, I can't think of another track, with maybe Phillip Island is another one, where because of his style.
Yeah.
And, he doesn't hit the brakes that hard, as we've talked about in the past.
Yeah,
he's very much. He likes to keep that corner speed up, and this track is perfect for that. Except for that one corner, which is super slow. But you don't go from 200 miles an hour into that corner either. You've already slowed down. So this was a great opportunity, I think, for him to because of his style of riding, to be able to actually ride with the broken shoulder. And during the race, he didn't. Obviously later on he got tired, but during warm up, I could not believe watching him hanging off the bike, because you could see that it wasn't normal, when he was going to the right side. Because normally you just push off, right? But he can't just push off anymore, because that bone is in there, the plates, what, 8 screws? Eight screws in there, right? Yeah. Titanium plate, 8 screws. It's moving around. It's preventing a lot of the movement, and you could see that it was just, it looked really awkward, and yet the speed was not that bad. It was crazy. It was really freaking unbelievable. And my wife I wouldn't say she's a Lorenzo fan, but from the very get-go, when he came into MotoGP, she was just like, this guy is a freaking Superman. He's just completely made from different stuff,
Well, I guess B might be like, Miss Beth Andrews. It's Beth's Weekly mentioned. We had a discussion the other week. Someone had said, Brad Drew, who's a South African motorcycle journalist, had said, Marc Marquez, fan or not, discuss. It's a Twitter thing. And I said, I'm a fan of Marquez, but I'm not a Marquez fan. And she, or no, sorry, I said, I'm an admirer, but I'm not a fan. And she said, oh, why not? Thinking I had some negative thing to say. And I said, no, what I mean is, I'm a huge fan of Marquez. I like the kid. I think he's absolutely amazing. But I wouldn't describe myself as I'm a Marc Marquez fan, because to me, that means that I follow him to the exclusion of all others.
Right.
And to that degree, I'd almost question whether I would really call myself a Lorenzo fan. Half of it now is just sort of tradition and banter. I want the quickest rider to win. I suppose I want the rider who I think is quickest to win, because it reinforces the validity of my opinion. so yeah.
Wouldn't you say you'd like to see more than your rider a good fight for the finish?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if I'm going to nail my colours to a single mast, I'm a fan of racing.
Right.
Sometimes I prefer some people to win than others.
Sure.
And this was another China 2008. And I mean, people are saying, wow, amazeballs, this kid, man of steel and all that. Well, they're all pretty amazing. Colin last year, with a broken collarbone at Silverstone, year before last, Cal last year at Silverstone.
Yeah.
We have many examples of it. And to me, this was,
well, Rossi at Sachsenring in 2010,
Yeah, exactly. Randy Depugnier, 2010.
Exactly.
Spiral fracture. I mean, woof.
But you gotta admit, it was great to see the Superman logo in the background when Lorenzo was going around.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's go.
So we got on to Q. We got to Q1.
Yeah.
And the only Ducati that had made
that's right, you were mentioning
straight
how
to Q2
horrible, yeah,
was Michele Pirro.
Yeah.
Because we had Nicky Hayden, Andrea Iannone, and Dovizioso, none of whom had made it through to Q2 from being in the top 10 quickest times. So they went out, and Randy DiPugno was quickest, just from Nicky Hayden. So Iannone was relegated to start at the back. Well, I say not at the back, not in the front four rows, along with Andrea Dovizioso. I mean, he was beaten by two CRTs there, RDP and Barbera. Dovi had a tough weekend. So that was sobering.
We forgot to mention the fact that was this the first time where Espargaró made it to Q1 by the end of FP3?
No. No, oh, okay. He's done it before. I'm certain he's done it before.
Okay.
But Alex Espargaró was through, certainly one of them's got in there before. Alex Espargaró got through, and he's just absolutely setting this place on fire on that ART bike. But Q2 was just brilliant. I mean, Cal was really quick, and he got his first ever pole position, and he didn't even crash to make himself angry.
Right.
So, but it was. The top. We had Rossi got pole, and
Bradle had pole for a while too.
Well, Rossi had pole for about a second.
Yes.
And then Bradle took it.
Exactly.
And then Marc Marquez took it, and then Cal took it off him. Danny was subdued all weekend. Bradley Smith was on the second row, which was great. Alex Espargaró qualified seventh. Randy DiPugno qualified ninth, ahead of Nicky and Michele Pirro. And of course, and there was some criticism of this. Jorge Lorenzo, the worst he could qualify was 12th.
Right.
Because we'd had a dry FP1. He set the fastest time, which was still the fastest time due to FP2 and 3 being wet when we came into the qualifier, or when we finished FP3. So he's definitely in the top 12 because he's qualified for Q2. The fact he didn't ride in it, people saying, will he start from the pit lane or will he start from the back of grid? No, he's going to start from 12th.
Right.
Now, that I'm sure was part of the decision to race, was the fact that it was going to be worthwhile. He wasn't going to have to try and get through a whole, I don't know what you call them. I was going to say flock, more like a pack of CRTs. We had a bit of a deja vu start where Cal didn't have a great start and Danny Pedrosa did and got the whole shot and led away. And we had Danny followed by Marc Marquez, who got another great start. Rossi was, by the end of the first lap, had made his way up to third. I think he'd started about fifth. But Lorenzo was seventh by the end of the first lap. Then he was up to fifth, then fourth, which he held for a long, long time with a very careful and respectful Cal behind him.
I was just going to say that the pass, the classic pass at Assen before the chicane is to go into the chicane and just stuff the other rider.
Yeah.
And the way that Cal passed Jorge, I was just like, this man, I just really love Cal for being a gentleman,
Yeah.
Because he would have done if Jorge had been at full strength, he would have waited just a split second longer and then hit the brakes and force Jorge to really lay on the brakes much more than he wanted to, but he passed him earlier in that section.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very gentlemanly, because all the other passes that Cal did that same, because he did three passes exactly the same place, but the other guys he was very aggressive with.
Well, it was interesting to see the contrast between Cal's pass on Jorge and Marquez's pass on Danny Pedrosa.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Cal's pass on Mark too.
Yeah,
I mean on Pedrosa as
well. On Pedrosa, no, absolutely. I mean he's doing his team, his manufacturer, and his friend quite a huge service if he's as brutal as he can be within the rules. Oh, that was the other thing, just on the lead up. Of course, gentle soul Andrea Dovizioso got a penalty point for kicking out at Hector Barbera. And right. Hector Barbera got a penalty point for coming out on brand new tyres and going straight onto the racing line on his outlap and hindering, or how do they phrase it, impinging upon another rider's progress. But
I have to say that was very telling of the frustration level that I think that Dovi is hiding.
Yes.
He's been hiding all season.
And he's probably the last person in that paddock you'd expect to kick out at anybody.
That's why. Yeah. And I was just like, there must be so much frustration right now.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly this weekend. It was a horrible weekend for them. But back to the race. I watched it on MotoGP.com, so I had Gavin Emmett and Nick Harris, and then immediately switched over to Eurosport at the end of it and watched it all again with Julian Ryder, Steve Day, and Neil Spaulding. And Neil Spaulding made a point when they were watching Cal following Jorge, and they were saying, that'll be annoying Duncan, by the way. Duncan Bishop, he hates it when pundits and people refer to them by their first names as if they know them. And I kind of know what he means, so I just do it now to annoy him. Neil Spaulding made the point.
My buddy Neil.
Yes.
My good drinking buddy Neil said.
Yeah, Spaulders, my old maga. He said, if Mr. Crutchlow were to take Signor Lorenzo and overtake him, he said it's only worth him doing it if he can then get past Danny Pedrosa as well. And I'm thinking, okay, look, I know he's racing for the same manufacturer. I know that the two of them are friends. You know, they socialize as much as two riders ever will who are in the same paddock, I think. You know, he's still a racer, you know. And
not only that, but he had just scored the first pole position for a British rider since, like, in over a decade.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Jeremy McWilliams.
2002. That was the last pole position also set by Two-Stroke.
Yeah.
In Premier class.
You know, and a lot of people were saying, oh, Jorge, how could this be the first British winner since Barry Sheen in 1981 in the Premier class? And we're all, no. but again, you know, Cal, he again suffered from his start. Now, I know him and Valentino Rossi have been working really hard at the recent tests at Aragon and Catalunya on their full tank progress, because Rossi had said, look, you look at the times at the Catalunya race, the last third of the lap of the race, and I was pretty much, on average, the quickest rider out there. But I'd lost so much time by then, I couldn't make it back up because of this full tank thing. Rossi seems to have got it sorted. Cal certainly made improvements, but maybe still some work to go. But then Rossi and Lorenzo's bikes have these new fuel tanks where the fuel is actually stored very low into the rear. It's almost underneath the seat rather than traditionally where you'd think, you know, under the tank, which is just an airbox. So anyway, they've got out front and, man, talk about the years falling away. Rossi just made it look like the old days where it just looked effortless and inevitable that he got past Marquez. Then he got past Danny in the classic coming into the chicane.
Yeah.
So that was the first time someone...
And then I was thinking to myself, this is the classic Rossi race is where he is the master of, granted, he hasn't been able to do it in a long time, but of winning at the slowest pace, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when Danny was behind him, he was basically racing. He was riding that bike at the pace where he was keeping Danny within, you know, between half a second and a second.
Yeah.
The moment that Marquez passed Danny, that's when he said, "I gotta go." You know, it was
because this kid's dangerous.
He knew, yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I mean, he knows Danny, and he knows Marquez already to some degree, and he knew that if Marquez was got past Danny, then he had to push it a little bit harder, and he did.
There's
going to be a lot of what ifs about what if Jorge was there, but that you know we look at all the other races we had this year, and the difference in times between, when Jorge wins, or when Danny wins, when Marquez wins, you know, this was a absolutely deserved win by Rossi.
Oh,
and anybody who says, well, if Lorenzo was there, he wouldn't have won it. I think it would have been a good fight.
Well, Sharon said this actually, and she said, look, it's possible that we might have had a Catalunya 2009
right,
if Jorge hadn't got hurt, because Rossi loves Assen, he does well there. You know, this was potentially this would have been a ding dong battle of the two of them up front. So yeah, but of course we'll never know. But what I'm really chuffed. It was in the dry. There were no strange. You know, okay, we had an injured Lorenzo, but there were no strange circumstances. You know, none of the other leaders crashed out. So I think Rossi was able to just put the hammer down, finish the race, win it, and know there's no funniness going on here. Okay, I mean, Cal said about his pole, it's not a real pole because, you know, Jorge wasn't here, you know, running in Q2. There is always going to be that, but people always get hurt. But, you know, as someone said, whoever wins the title deserves to win the title because they've been the best rider that year.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who it is. But it was fantastic to see.
Did you cry?
No.
I had a tear. I shed a tear.
I was just weeping. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. I got a real buzz and adrenaline rush. You know, we had Marquez stuff the inside Danny in the chicane. Man. Then Cal did exactly the same. Caught Marquez. And I thought this was a real wonderful thing to see, was Cal trying to get past Marquez on a penultimate lap, or was it even the last lap? And they, as they came down at the home straight into turn one, just touched the back of his wheel.
Yeah.
No real effect on Marquez's bike. Cal nearly ran completely off, managed to keep on the rumble strip, got back on. Danny was too far behind to make any progress and close up on Cal significantly. But that was, you know, that was the challenge for the second step, or the second place gone. But in Parc Fermé, Marc Marquez went up to a big toothy grin.
So good.
Puts his hands together as if to say, hey, we touched. Cal does that shrugging, yeah, sorry about that. Big hugs, big smiles, no recriminations. And do you know what? When did you last see such a happy podium? There were no hidden agendas. There was no one turning their back on anyone else. There were no wagging fingers, you know.
Very true.
And I'm not having a go at Danny and Jorge specifically. And to be honest, Jorge's normally a very happy podium stander as well.
Well, especially when he wins and gets to do his jump.
Say again, sorry?
Especially when he wins and he gets to do his jump.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. But it was just,
I
mean, such...
I swear, you know, do you think that Jorge practices that jump? Because he has it down, where every time he does it, it's exactly the same from first place, you know, with the right fist pumping as he jumps off the... Yeah, right.
he might do in front of the mirror in his bedroom at home, you know. Yeah.
I think there's more than one mirror in his home.
Probably. But I tell you what, it did occur to me, particularly watching Marquez pass Pedrosa with no consideration or respect, or, you know, senior teammate, championship leader bullshit. And I thought, Danny, all those times on the podium where you've turned your back on him and very, very clearly cold shouldered him.
Is
that coming home to roost? And the fact that Marquez, time and time again, we've seen this year, he offers the bottle of champagne to Clink. He gets it, the Clink from Lorenzo, or he gets the Clink from Cal, or whoever else is on the podium with him. And then every time Danny turns his back on him, I just think, well, you know, you sow the wind and then the whirlwind.
That's so well said. That sums it up, man.
And I'm also very aware that after the first two races of the season where Danny didn't even get on the podium at Qatar and he saw his teammate beat him, then at Kota, his teammate wins his second ever MotoGP race. And I think I said, well, he's psychologically destroyed. no, clearly, again, you know, Kel surprise, for those who've been following this for a while, I was wrong. But if Danny can come back to Sachsenring, where he's won the last 3 years running, so it's a circuit he really, really likes, if he can come back from this weekend and win, my God, that kid he's no longer a kid. You know, he has indeed become a man, because I'm sure on Thursday night he must have been thinking, I could be leaving with 32 point lead. No, you've left with a 9 point lead. Right. You came fourth, your championship rival, your main championship rival,
with a broken collarbone.
With a broken collarbone, came just behind you.
Yeah.
You know.
Not just behind you, but in points, yeah.
Two points behind you. Yeah. You know, and that was the thing. Someone said, you know, Cal getting past Jorge and then Danny scored Jorge an extra point rather than Cal just sitting behind him. Because Jorge fourth and Danny third, then you've got a 3-point gap.
Right, right, right.
When Cal gets past them both, obviously, as you go further down the order, the gap shrinks till it's down to, you know, 1 point from, what is it, 11th, from sixth position downwards.
Sixth down, yeah.
And speaking of sixth position, Stefan Bradl, very lonely race. He had one of those Nicky Hayden days where he must have thought, hello,
where is
anyone
it,
else? Is anyone else still here? Yeah. And the other thing that was amazing, when Rossi overtook Danny at the during the sixth, towards the end of the sixth lap, did you hear the roar?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just
the, you know, I have to say that it makes me a little bit sad that I've read some comments about, oh God, here come the Rossi fanboys. You know, you don't even have to like Rossi to enjoy the fact that a guy who's had such a fucking miserable time for the last couple of years, you could hate the guy, still revel in the fact that the guy came back and won the fucking race, you know?
I mean, I don't think it's... I can't see how it's possible to hate him. I know some people... So I think some people get wound up by... They feel that a lot of people buy into the spontaneity myth. And I don't think anything Rossi does is spontaneous.
Right.
But I don't think you can dislike the guy. His joy of in racing and I do think he is. He comes across. I mean, if anyone is sort of, you know, thinking, oh, you know, Rossi's back, oh, we're going to have all this madness again, just watch Fastest. Get the Mark Neal film, Fastest, watch it. And I guarantee you will finish watching that film with a big beaming grin and think, that's why we fell in love with the guy in the first place. I've never had an issue with Rossi. I've had an issue with some of that sort of that fandom thing. And, you know, you're going to get the odd idiot in every walk of life. And when you've got as many fans as Rossi, proportionately, they're going to be more idiots.
Right.
I know several of them. I went to Barcelona with a couple of them, you know. But when you actually talk to them, you know, a lot of it's just banter. And often I think, particularly on things like Twitter, someone will see, I mean, I've had it before where people have leapt to my defense against the two, you know. You could see it as blind Rossi fans, but I know they're doing banter and they're just winding me up. I mean, Duncan Vaughan, who one of our mates who couldn't come with us this year, unfortunately, Duncan sometimes will come out with the things because he knows it'll yank my chain and I'll respond and then I'll do exactly the same to him. So if someone who doesn't know us might think that, you know, Duncan's this blind Rossi fan, I'm this blind Rossi hater, and neither of the cases is true. But it was fantastic to see him back, you know, absolutely no doubt about it. And let's see where this takes him. You know, I mean, Julian Ryder said at the beginning of the year, Rossi said, the aim to be happy is to win a race. If that happens, or when that happens, we'll see where we go from there. Woof.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's currently fifth in the standings. He's 2 points behind Cal Crutchlow.
We do have to mention the fact that Cal taking the podium did keep him in front of Rossi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we've got the standings. We've got Danny Pedrosa. Well, we should go through the finishing order first as well,
sure.
Actually, because there are other other people deserved a lot more attention they got this weekend because Rossi won, because Lorenzo came fifth with a broken collarbone, which he'd had operated on 36 hours earlier. It was ridiculous. So we had Rossi, Marquez, Crutchlow was your very, very happy podium. Pedrosa was your very glum fourth. Lorenzo was your exhausted fifth.
And did you notice, by the way, the first person that was standing there right there to greet him back at the garage? Costa.
No.
Dr. Costa.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He I mean, the guy is just always there. He's always taking care of these guys. It's
yeah.
He is the angel, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, what a presence. Mm. So we have Bradl in sixth, Bautista seventh, just ahead of and hassled for the entire race by Aleth Espargaró. Eighth place on a CRT. Hats off, young man. You are just putting yourself in the shop window for a factory ride or for a good prototype ride next year, along mm-hmm. with your brother. That'll be interesting. Bradley Smith, ninth. He took – we'd had Dovi came 10th and Nicky Hayden 11th. Now, Nicky had been leading that little trio. Bradley kind of stuffed it past them going into the last corner. Dovi stuffed it in to get past Nicky, took them both off the racing line, which allowed Bradley past.
Right, exactly.
So Dovi actually relegated himself one place and Nicky two. But they were both very philosophical about it, and I think they're more pissed off with the bike than with anything else. That's 10th and 11th. RDP was a fair way back in 12th place. Andrea Iannone and Michele Pirro were behind Randy, showing that the Ducati problems aren't limited to the factory team. And Carol Abraham scored a point on the Cardian AB Motor Racing ART bike. Then we had Danilo Petrucci, Colin Edwards 17th, Claudio Corti 18th, Yoni Hernandez 19th, probably sideways, Ex Barbera 20th, Brian Staring 21st, Michael Laverty 22nd, and Ivan Silva 23rd. We lost Lucas Beshek, which is...
the only rider who did not finish the race.
Yeah, yeah. And did he crash? I can't remember now. Did he crash, or was it just a mechanical?
No, crashed.
Okie doke. Wow. It was just absolutely just crazy, wonderful, exhilarating.
Assen is very rarely that you don't have a great story in Assen. And that's why people love it. That's why the riders love it. It's just like Phillip Island. You know, you don't if even if Casey Stoner runs away at Phillip Island, it's incredible to watch him there, right?
All those years,
6 years in a row. It's the same thing. I think those tracks just generate freaking something really, really wonderful to watch. And Assen's one of those.
Lorenzo's crash point, the kink in the back straight.
Yeah,
at Assen. I mean, watch it. I wince every time someone it's not even a lean. They kind of flick their shoulder, just put that turn in, then they're upright, then immediately they're over again into this incredibly fast sweeping left hander, then they've got to get it upright to break for the right hander into the chicane. I mean, it is just the precision that's required to make that track work is, and they say it's another one, it's like Donington, where they say if you cock up the crane of curves, you can't recover to you're in like the poo all the way
eight
to
corners
crane.
Are screwed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know what else? Misano has the same kind of thing. That back straight.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's another track. Well, yeah, but
kink, hard kink. Right. Yeah. We did a little comparison looking at, because you know everyone says, "Wow, Rossi, Assen's his track. He's he's won it eight times now." And so I just did a little comparison. Looking at Assen and then Ford to Sachsenring Laguna Seca, between Lorenzo and Pedrosa, because they're the two main title contenders, and Rossi, because hey, he's back in the news, and it's Valentino Rossi, so it's a good benchmark for anyone. And from 08 to the present day, Lorenzo had come sixth, then second, then first in 2010, his championship year. 2011, sixth, knocked off by Simoncelli in the first lap, and then fought his way back to sixth, which was amazing. DNF last year, Alvaro Bautista wiping him out, and came fifth this year with a broken collarbone. So Assen has been an eventful track for Jorge. Danny, second in 2008, didn't finish in 2009, second in 2010, didn't start in 2011, recovering from injury. 2012, he was second. This year, he's been fourth. So, you know, consistent-ish. Mm-hmm. But Rossi, strange. 2008, he came 11th. That must have been a fall and recover. That was a championship year for Rossi.
Yeah. He broke his hand that year. I'm thinking of 2006.
That was 2006. He broke his hand.
I don't remember what happened in 2008. You're right.
No, I can't. If anyone can remember what happened to Valentino Rossi in 2008 to come 11th, either that or the MotoGP.com records data guy meant to put first, but he had a bit of a twitch in his finger and he hit the one twice. Because in 2009 he won. 2010, he didn't start because he was still recovering from the broken leg he got on Mugello. 2011, he was fourth. That's on a Ducati. 2012, he was 13th. That's on a Ducati. And, of course, this year he won. Now, Sachsenring, interesting. Jorge DNF'd in 2008. Since then, he's come second. Danny DNF'd in 2008. Since then, he's come third, first. Rossi is all over the place. 2008 second, 2009 first, 2010 fourth, 2011 ninth, 2012 sixth. So right. He could come anywhere. But again,
he is good at that track. And remember, I mean, that fourth in 2010 was his return from the injury.
It was actually
6 weeks after the crash, you know.
Yeah.
And he was up for a podium if it wasn't for Casey Stoner taking him at the last corner, you know.
That's right. Yeah, he whooped it on the inside of him, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was Casey's last year on the Duke. Mm-hmm. But one thing we can take from that is Danny likes Der Sachsenring. There you go, Bob.
Nice.
He's good there. The DNF in 2008, I think that was the wet race, wasn't it, where they had the onboard camera going. And he was like 7 seconds clear in three laps or something.
Right.
And I remember they had the onboard cameras. He came over the hill into the start-finish straight, which is a bit like Alton Park start-finish straight. It's not really a straight, and it's not really, you know, it's a start and finish. That's it. And Julian Ryan was saying, oh, Danny wants to be careful. He's pushing a bit hard here. And then he went down. And that was his race over. So, if it's dry, I think Danny can go there with a lot of confidence, other than the fact he might be psychologically destroyed from this weekend. There I go again.
You're going to say it until he wins again.
Yeah, well, but he will do. He will do. And I suspect, actually, that I am wrong. And this weekend will have been a blow, which may have, you know, knocked him a bit. But he's got 2 weeks. He'll come back. And from Danny's point of view, at least he's coming back to a track that, I mean, 3 years on the bounce to win.
Right.
Often you get tracks riders like, and you get tracks riders do well at. But to win the same track 3 years in a row, that's pretty, Jorge at Catalunya type stuff. Yep. Then we go on to Laguna, where in 2008, Jorge was trying to see if he could actually make it into
the stratosphere.
Yeah. That was an awful series of crashes he was having. So he DNF'd. Then he came third in 09, one in 10, came second in 11 and second in 12. Danny didn't start in 2008, another injury recovery period. 2009, he won, crashed in 2010 and came third and third in 11 and 12. Rossi won in 2008, that amazing race with Casey Stoner. 2009, he was second. 2010, he was third. 2011, he was sixth, and of course last year he crashed going into the corkscrew.
Yep.
So he DNF'd. So, but we know that it's a track Rossi likes. I think Laguna is.
He likes it on the Yamaha for sure.
Yeah, I remember Marco Melandri saying, "I hate this track. I hate this track."
And yeah, said, the yeah, first you, year you mean?
You
the
do
first
really
year.
Well here. And he went, "Yeah, but God, I it's hard it. Work." It really was.
It's 32 laps, man. Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no rest, is there? There is no let up. It's so physical. And of course, they're all dizzy from all these clockwise tracks. And so they come to one that's anti-clockwise, or counterclockwise. Right. Morning, Scout. Yeah. World Superbikes must be getting close. I'm getting a hard on. Sorry, another Top Gun quote. I feel so sorry for World Superbikes. We had two great superbike races. Well,
fantastic.
I'd say, yeah, they were really entertaining and full of incident and a really, again, full of incident World Super Sport race.
Oh, and
how overshadowed were they by the fact that everyone was talking about MotoGP? And in qualifying, I mean, it started in Superpole. Loris Baz, thankfully, didn't hurt himself. Seriously, he was bruised, I think, but his bike cartwheeled into the kitty litter, through the kitty litter, over an air fence, through some more kitty litter, and back onto the track on the other side of one of the hairpins. And it was just, I thought, is that bike ever going to stop rolling? It was like a 10-pin bowling ball doing that sort of inevitable roll down to hit the pins. And thankfully, it didn't collect anybody. It nearly did. Red flagged the session. Now, the red flags came out. By the time they came out, Tom Sykes was on an absolute blaster of a lap. There were no red flags to see between where he was and the finish line. It was like they came out a second later, he crossed the line, but race direction said, no, sorry, your time doesn't count. Red flags already out. You know, he couldn't have seen them. He went across the line, saw the red flag, so I went, oh, right, went round slowly, came back into the pits going, yeah, that was a great time, wasn't it? They're saying, sorry, guys, your time doesn't count. So he sits there, and now he's got a problem because he's used his last qualifying tyre. So he's saying to his race engineer, let's put the used qualifier on, I'll get another lap out of it. And he said, no, stick a race tyre on. So he went out on a race tyre, angry, and nailed another incredible lap. He was on pole position by half a second, a second from Johnny Ray. Wow. And Davide Giuliano had a great weekend. So we had Tom Sykes, Johnny Ray, Giuliano with a front row. Remember, of course, World Superbike's only three to a row now, rather than the entertaining.
Now, it was good to see Ray there, but I also remember that this Imola is one track where the Honda does do well.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's been suffering this year so bad, and it was just...
Yeah. Johnny Ray, some of the... I mean, I know we've talked about this before. Speed trap times are not that
important.
Amazing,
yeah.
Or that important or that significant. But he's so down on top speed and getting to that top speed that, but the circuits like Imola, they suit and they negate a lot of that problem he has. We had, and Johnny Ray looked strong all weekend. Thomas Sykes, Johnny Ray, Davide Giuliano on the satellite factory Aprilia, if you like. Then we had Gintoli, Laverty, and then Leon Camier. Great effort from the Suzuki. Big Leon on the second row. Melandri, Badavini, and Loris Baz were the third row. And then we had that was the Super Pole 3. And then going backwards, we had Chas Davies, a still injured Leon Haslam, and Michele Fabrizio. I think it was Jack Burnicle was saying that Leon Haslam's daughter does a great impression of dad walking. She does this exaggerated limp thing because that's what dad does when he walks. So bless him. He's still riding with a far from recovered, fully recovered leg. The return of Norrie Hager we mentioned last week, and probably best not really mention it again. Qualified 18th, and James Whitman said he's not really looked that interested all weekend. Not quite sure why he came back to ride. I don't know. So we had race one was basically Tom Scott Sykes took off like a scalded cat.
And that was it. Well, for first anyway.
Yeah. Davide Giuliano, very, very creditable second place. I kept waiting for him to bin it or
crash. I know, exactly.
To crash or just to tear up his tyres and start dropping backwards. And he didn't. He held it there and he came in second. So blooming well done. Eugene Laverty came third, having inherited third place from his teammate Sylvain Gintoli, who just had a mechanical engine death. It'll be an electrical fault, no doubt.
Yeah.
And Marco Melandri, close but not quite close enough. Michele Fabrizio always runs well at Imola. Came fifth, although some distance behind, just pipping Chas Davies on the second BMW. Leon Camier, Badavini, Loris Baz, an injured and credible ninth. Leon Haslam, an injured and very credible tenth. Carlos Checa, Max Neukirchner, Sandy.
What is up with Checa? This is such a good track for him too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can't still be him. Surely injured. I just think the Panigale is. Not quite. Badavini was doing better.
It's a pretty bike.
It is a very pretty bike. But Laurie Hugger did score a point, came 15th. Our early doors, unfortunately, we lost Johnny Ray. And it was a strange crash. I forgot, because we had Johnny was ahead of Giuliano and hassling Tom Sykes or keeping him in sight at least. And he went round one of the left-hand corners, and they wondered if he touched a curb, and he hadn't.
There's that part of the track is infamous for that the bump there, and I think he must have hit that bump.
You get
light in the front, and then going into the corner.
But it was almost slow motion. Chattering. Gentle little turn, and then he got back on the bike, tried to continue, and then came into the pit. So obviously there was a fault with it. We'll go slightly out of chronological sequence and go straight to race two, where basically, as far as the winner goes, you can just run race one's commentary. Yep, Tom Sykes took off like a scalded cat, and that was that. Johnny Ray stayed with it this time, and
Gintoli's bike didn't blow up.
And Gintoli's bike didn't blow up, and he came third behind Johnny Ray, who stayed upright. Davide Giuliano didn't. This time, he did fulfill a lot of people's expectations. Lovely check. And he was, you know, podium.
Good chap, great look.
Yeah, very, very manicured look, if you know, if that's what people like.
He's starting to remind me of Freddie Mercury, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get that. And he crashed front wheel washout. Eugene went down as well. So we lost Eugene Laverty. So we had Sykes, Ray, Gintoli, Melandri, who had a sort of okay weekend, hassled right to the line by Chaz Davies. In fact, Chaz had got in front of him, but Marco managed to get him back. Loris Baz, even better, injured sixth. Leon Camier, Michel Fabrizio, seventh and eighth. Leon Haslam, an even better, injured ninth. Badavini was 10th. Chekanoy Kirchner, Sandy, and Hager again picked up a single point. So he's got two World Championship points. But really, in between that, we'll have a look. Tom Sykes now takes the championship lead from Gintoli, who's 6 points behind, 235 to 229. Eugene on 190. Marco Melandri on 182. If those Aprilia lads can cut out the crashing and the mechanical DNFs, but then, you know, if my Aunt Marjorie had a pair of nuts, she'd be my uncle. So, yeah, if ifs and buts was pounds and pence. I'll tell you what is impressive, I think. Chaz Davies is fifth behind Melandri. He's on 154 points. Loris Baz, sixth on 136. Johnny Ray behind him on 125. Johnny's had a few DNFs and a couple of circuits where the bike just doesn't work. But, yeah, Loris Baz is, I think, showing people that he's someone to be reckoned with.
Last year he was always starting to shine.
Yeah, particularly in the wet, and there was that thing of, you know, well, let's see him do it consistently in the dry, and we'll see how good he is then.
Before we go to Super Sport, I don't know if you're ready to go there yet.
Yeah,
are you? Okay, I just really wanted to just say that when Haga announced that he was going to race, the only thing I could not stop salivating over the idea of seeing Haga at Laguna Seca, because The first time that I ever saw that guy was at Laguna Seca in 1998, when it was his first full season in Superbikes, and he just completely owned. And it was just, I mean, I can't wait till September, dude. I was like.
Is he back or is he? Well, was this
I don't
just
know.
A one-off,
I don't,
you see?
I don't know. It's strange that we don't have a definite about that.
Yeah,
but I'm really crossing my fingers that Haga's going to be racing a couple more rounds, especially Laguna Seca.
Yeah,
you know that's a perfect track for a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, but only if he's.
I mean, I'm not expecting him to win or anything like that, but you know,
but it would be good to see him there.
Exactly.
Super Sport. I haven't got the QP details down on the show notes, but Sam Lowes was on pole. Keenan Sofalago was near the front. What else do you need to know? and again, Super Sport had a red flag, and this was he didn't restart. Actually, his name's not here. I can't remember his name. It was one of the backmarkers had an engine blow and proper like explode blow. He got off the track as quickly as he could, but it was on a corner. And as James Whitham said, the problem is when someone at the front blows, everyone behind, so almost you see it happen, you would take avoiding action and immediately you know, wow, there's oil on the track there. This was a guy right near the back. So he blows. No one else has seen it. The leaders come over not expecting it. And there were the oil flags did come out, but they were very close to the incident. So there wasn't much warning of, oh, hang on, let's go easy. And a couple of people did go down. We lost Tommy Bridewell, who was unfortunately was unable to restart because it's a single bike rule and his bike was too knackered. Mm-hmm. A couple of other people went down and were able to. I think Michael van der Mark and Sheridan Morais might have run off there. But, yeah, so we had a red flag and then a restart. And at the restart, Sam Lowes, who had he been leading, or was he just tucked in behind Keenan when it was red flagged, had an awful start. And then in his anxiety to get back to the front, ran wide and was at one stage, I think, down in about eighth or ninth place. Keenan up front was having a really good dust up with anyone he could get his hands on, really. And Keenan Sofalaku went on to win, but Sam Lowes did this amazing, just bully, slide, you know, knife your way through the pack, up to second place for damage limitation. And Vladimir Leonov was the Yaknich Motorsport teammate to Sam Lowes, was the other one who got on the podium. Did you see the race, Jules?
Yes.
Yeah, it was... And the thing that got me at the beginning was that there was a great shot as they the start, then they come around that first corner and they come into that sort of mini straight, and there were swarms of them. And it's weird. World Superbike either has a massive grid and World Supersport looks a bit embarrassingly small, or vice versa. And this year, I mean, the World Superbikes, we only had 19 starters, I think. World Supersport was absolutely bloody dozens of them. Well,
yeah,
three,
yeah. No,
three,
it's three, a second Moto 3 race, except, you know,
it's a great series. I really do enjoy. I know, you know, Jim's long been an advocate of the World Supersport series, and there's some really entertaining riders in there. Who, strangely, you know, certainly when we look at Keenan, remember he came to Moto 2, he did that Estoril race as a wild card because the World Supersport season had finished, and you thought, wow, and he did really, really well till he destroyed his tires and then went backwards. But then he came for a season and
sucked.
Yeah. Same in Superbike. Goes back to Supersport. Oh, world champion again. Well, you know, I guess you found your happy place. So, you know, yeah, really good series. And some great racing. And I do feel a bit guilty that we're going to give it this short amount of attention.
You know, the thing is, it's so funny because you asked me if I watched the race. I watched all the races this weekend. Exhausted. I also went for a long bicycle ride, which in like 90 degree, so it's like what, 38.
Yeah.
Everything seems like it's all got kind of blended together. The only thing I really remember was the GP race.
Well, know? It's funny. We were talking, we were thinking that would have been a good race, you know?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a Catalunya 09, just in terms of forget the personalities, forget the background stories, just watching the bikes on the track. Yeah, that was a good race, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite an, you know, edge of Sova wow.
Absolutely.
But then you put the circumstances in, you know, quite possibly, certainly one of the best two or three riders we've ever seen since motorcycle racing started, you know, or certainly since anyone took notice of it. Hasn't won for 2.5 years. We've got one of the two main title contenders 36 hours after an operation to repair a broken collarbone. We've got huge British support at the circuit because it's so close and it's really popular and everyone likes going to Holland because they have these really interesting coffee shops and, you know, it's a lovely place to go. And a Brit gets on his first pole. You know, all the subplots. And I feel so sorry for Alethea Spargo, who I'm sure would have been the most celebrated rider in there amongst the media for doing that, such an amazing job on that CRT. And, you know, and Randy DiPugno. But, I mean, you look at the CRT points and Spargo is just absolutely blitzing them. But
you know what's funny that when you were saying that, because it's so true. It's so true. There were so many of these sub-stories. If Lorenzo hadn't gotten hurt, and then went on to win the race, we would have been talking about some other rider.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? David Emmetmer did a great article the other day, and he said he suffers from the same problem as Pete Sampras, as, you know, Schumacher to a degree in Formula One, although he really, you know, I just don't think the guy had a personality. He just had a computer.
Oh,
chip.
Schumacher? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He says, German as they come, man.
Yeah. and you know, and that's up against some pretty stiff competition. Sorry.
Stiff. That's funny, dude. Did you mean that?
yes.
Kimi.
but you know, we do have these sorts of this thing of we like, I don't know how to put it. It's the metronome comment that's been applied to Lorenzo. Technically, yeah. It's incredibly impressive, but it kind of reminds me a bit, you know, air shows. I've been at air shows just as a fan, you know.
I know exactly what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the Blue Eagles with the Army Air Corps helicopter display team. As a helicopter pilot, and I knew the guys flying the aircraft as well, so obviously I had a bit of a personal connection. But you know, even before that, I could really admire the technical ability it takes to do these precision maneuvers, all coordinate and everything. But to a crowd, they're like, when are the red arrows on? You know, because it's slow and it's technical and that's Lorenzo. And then the red arrows come on, or you don't even need that. You just need, like when we had the Welsh Pool Air Show here the other day, you have the Eurofighter Typhoon. You know, this thing came past probably just below subsonic, and it's all noise blast. Wow! Technically, probably much easier to do than this helicopter display, but it gets people's attention, and that's Rossi.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this thing, you were saying earlier, you know, that he gets out in front and then just sits there, and I'm thinking, is his level of genius when he has that control over the bike and everything's working that he can actually choose to sit at a point where he thinks this is going to give you, the guy behind me, the thought process of he hasn't got away. If he's at 100%, maybe I can just close. And actually he's going to lead you. You know, if Rossi pulls a pin and he's 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds ahead, the guy behind is going to go, well, I can't keep up with that. I'm going to crash, so I'll just settle for second. Whereas, yeah.
Right.
Whereas it's almost like dangling the carrot of, oh, look, I can't pull away from you. No. or, and I'm sure if someone had sat him down and asked him this and said, you know, or were you at 100% yourself, he'd just look and smile and go,
of course.
I struggle to remember. I was just enjoying it, you know. He's not going to give that away. But and of course, I mean, when Lorenzo broke his collarbone, I was thinking, oh, this is not going to help with the Motorpod Fantasy League. then I watched Sylvain Guintoli blow up in one race at World Superbikes and Eugene crash out of the other one. But actually, thank you, Valentino Rossi, and Jorge's incredible performance, and the two Aprilia riders that, if the other one did crash out, they did all right. I only dropped 3 places, so I'm 15th as we stand. Jim dropped 5 places to 36th. Chelsea dropped 13 places, you're 154th.
Thank you.
It is a transfer window, everybody. So if That's you great. Want to try and chase down Gary Beale, who remains on top on 857 points, well done, Gary. If you want to try and chase down Gary, get your riders, you know, look at the calendar, work out which are the series that most points are available for and load your team accordingly. But remember, you can only change 3 at a time, not 5 like I tried to do at the last window. And then it went, it was like, oh, wow, that was just fantastic. Looking forward, we've got, you know, I can't remember where the next World Superbikes is. It's not the Laguna one next, is it?
Not yet. No, it's in September. It's way away.
Yeah. But we're definitely going to Sachsenring next weekend.
Yeah, literally.
And, yeah, we've got some Motorpod news about Sachsenring.
We're going to Moscow next, dude, in Superbikes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Moscow. Yeah, that was a fun little track.
Very, very surprisingly awesome.
Yeah. Apparently the accommodation isn't, but some interesting stories came out.
It's freaking Russia, what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly. but we've got some news about Sachsenring.
Yeah. So I'm off on Thursday. I'm taking off for Europe, and I will be at the Sachsenring the following weekend.
The Europe.
And der Sachsenring.
Der Sachsenring.
So if anyone's going to the race in Germany, definitely send email to meetup@motopodcast.com. I would love to meet up and be there for 3 days. And we've already lining up some great interviews, so it should be interesting.
Yeah.
I've always actually wanted to go to Sachsenring. I think the racetrack for a long time had a a kind of a negative. I don't know why, because the racing to me has always been good there, but for some reason it had a negative connotation, like it's just whatever. They had to have a race in Germany and blah, 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 whatever. I've always liked the racing there.
Yeah, it's strange. I think because Germany have had such iconic tracks. You had the Nürburgring, yeah, you had Hockenheim,
exactly.
It seemed a bit.
It's a goofy track.
If you're only going to go there,
goofy track.
I don't like the track, but like you said, we have some brilliant races there, and it's a schizophrenic track. It doesn't know what it is. You've got the Omega turn at the beginning, probably one of the longest turns in the history of turning. then on the backstage, you've got these really fast, massive elevation change straights with kinks, and there's just, you know, so many opportunities for unconventional passing places. Although, I mean, they do say there's only two or three places you can.
Yeah, the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, on the bottom of the hill is a classic, and coming into, and then coming uphill into the final. I mean, it's not a straight.
If you think about the amount of races that have been decided on the last lap at Sachsenring.
Yeah,
it's astounding, actually.
Yeah, it's the classic,
last
corner leader change thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is definitely something to look forward to. Is that the same weekend as Moscow? I can't remember now.
Moscow is on the. Why do they do this? It's in 17 days. Yeah, so it's the same weekend.
Oh, again. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to have a clash, and this time, of course, it will. But. Yeah,
oh, no, I'm sorry. Moscow is the same weekend as Laguna.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, no, that works okay. That's you've got very different time scales. Yeah.
yeah. And, of course, I'll be at Laguna as well, which is going to be crazy because I'm going to come back from Europe, going to be on Europe time, and then I'm going to go back to work, and then I'm going to go to Laguna that next weekend.
Oh,
we'll see how that works out. I mean, hey, dude, if they can do it and race... The least I can do is freaking show up and take photos and walk around and talk to people.
Well, this is one of these things that gets me, okay? We're in the Sachsenring.
Mm-hmm.
They finished the race on the Sunday. On Thursday, they have to be at Laguna Seca for all the press, the pre-event stuff. Friday, they start FP. So they've got 6 days to travel several thousand miles. Then they have a month off. To another American race, a week after which they've got to be in the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
A week after that, they're at Silverstone. The logistics of it don't make any sense to me. I know the riders like it because a lot of them will stay in America, but the teams don't. The teams, have to ship themselves back. It's crazy. Interesting stuff.
No cost cutting there.
No. Right, dude, I think I better get out of here and go and get ready for a day of work. And we will speak to you all again next week. And you get everyone get set for an early show this week.
Yep.
Set for an early show this week. You've just listened to the entire show to hear me say that. So don't get ready. You've just had. It's this time warp thing. Does matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's morning for you. And I appreciate you waking up early, extra early for us.
No worries at all. I've all got to do now is go and safely fly a helicopter for 12 hours. Well, I'm not going to fly for 12 hours. That'd be ridiculous. Run out of fuel for a start. All right, everybody.
Very good. Very good.
You have a good flight and a good trip, and no doubt I will communicate with you whilst you are here at Der Sachsenring.
Yes.
And we'll be along again next week.
To talk about something.
Absolutely.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers, and ta-da.
Bye.